We're now beginning the 12th chapter of Joshua. In this chapter, the historian, who is probably Joshua, gives a summary of the conquest made by the children of Israel. And he begins by talking about those kings that they conquered on the east side of the Jordan while they were still under the leadership of Moses, before Joshua took over, before they went into the land of Canaan. And then he's going to talk about the conquest they made in the land of Canaan. So verse 1 of Joshua 12. Now these are the kings of the land which the children of Israel smote and possessed their land on the other side Jordan toward the rising of the sun from the river Arnon unto Mount Hermon and all the plains on the east. Now this first verse gives a general description of the boundaries of the total land that they captured on the east side of the Jordan River. And he describes it from the river Arnon on the south, which is a river that runs into the Dead Sea, about midways of the Dead Sea, unto Mount Hermon on the north, which is the mountain up in the northernmost boundary of Israel. It's the mountain from which the waters originate that go into Lake Merom or Lake Hula that go on in to form the Sea of Galilee, and then from the Sea of Galilee it becomes the Jordan River. Now in the second verse he describes more in detail the two kings and the two kingdoms that they conquered in this territory on the east side of the Jordan River. So in the second verse, Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon and ruled from Aroer, which is upon the bank of the river Arnon, and from the middle of the river, and from half Gilead even under the river Jabbok, which is the border of the children of Ammon. So the first king he described is Sihon. He gives the boundaries of this king. He dwelt in Heshbon. Heshbon is a city in the southern part of this territory that's just a little bit north of the Dead Sea. And he ruled from Aroer, which is a city on the very southern portion now, and it was on the bank of the river Arnon. That's the southernmost boundary of this territory. And he went from there to the middle, from the middle of the river, even from half Gilead, and Gilead is a mountain that's located about 20 miles north of Heshbon. So the territory of this king was up to one half of the area of this Mount Gilead. The other side, of course, would belong to the children of Ammon, which we're going to describe here in a few minutes. And then it went even to the river Jabbok. Now the river Jabbok is a few miles north of this Mount Gilead, and it runs into the Jordan River, which is the border of the children of Ammon. Now this is the description of their territory and its borders on the western areas. Now verse 3 shows the borders on the eastern portion. Verse 3, and from the plain to the Sea of Shinaroth on the east. Now the Sea of Shinaroth, of course, what we know is the Sea of Galilee. And under the Sea of the Plain, even the Salt Sea on the east. It goes from the Sea of Galilee in the northern portion on the east to the Salt Sea in the southern portion on the east. The way to Beth Jerioth-Moth, and from the south under Ashdoth-Pisgah. So this is just a description of the boundaries of this kingdom of Sihon, who dwelt in Heshbon. Well, they defeated Sihon, and they captured all of his territory very well, and that's again described in the second and third chapters of Deuteronomy. Now, beginning in the fourth verse, he talks about the kingdom of Og. Verse 4, and the coast of Og, king of Bashan, which was of the remnant of the giants, that dwelt at Ashtaroth and at Edrei. Now, this king Og was a giant. In Deuteronomy, the third chapter, he talks about the size of his bed. His bed was 13.5 feet long and 6 feet wide. It was an iron bedstead, and it was because of its great size it was described there again, given the dimensions of it. He was the king of Bashan. Now, Bashan was a territory further north of the territory of Sihon, and Bashan is just almost due east of this Sea of Galilee. And this king had two palaces, two cities that he dwelt in, Ashtaroth and Edrei, and we don't know if one was a summer and one was a winter palace or just how it was, but he was a very powerful king, and he ruled this entire territory to the north there, except the very easternmost portion, which was under the direction of Sihon. Verse 5, and reigned in Mount Hermon and at Scalca. Now these are the north and southern areas, boundaries of Og's kingdom. This is a territory that's roughly 75 miles long. So he reigned in Mount Hermon and Scalca, and in all Bashan, under the border of the Geshurites and the Maacathites and half Gilead, the border of Sihon, king of Heshbon. So his kingdom just borders up to the kingdom of Sihon, and this total territory then was conquered by the children of Israel while they were under the direction of Moses, just as they came up from the land of the wilderness. So verse 6 says, them did Moses, the servant of the Lord, and the children of Israel smite. They did totally smite this country and gained the possession of the entire area. And Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave it for a possession unto the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh. And this is given in more detail in the 32nd chapter of Numbers. So, 2.5 of the tribes were allowed to settle on the east side of the Jordan River. This was not the true promised land. This was not the land of Canaan. So, we see then that this was a kind of a first fruits. These are victories that they gained under Moses. And although the victories under Joshua were the gaining of the true land, and they were more spectacular and glorious victories in some ways, still, it was not God's will for them to forget their earlier victories, their earlier achievements, the earlier periods of glory in which he gave them this territory east of the Jordan River. And if you look on any good Bible map, you can see this territory well defined. You can see where the 2.5 tribes settled. Reuben settled on the south. Gad was in the mid portion, and the half-tribe of Manasseh was in the northern area. This was a very fruitful and productive land. These tribes were very fortunate, very muchly blessed to get to settle over here, and they were glad to do it. They didn't think they were getting a second-class land at all. And as a result of getting to settle here, Moses required that their men of war go ahead and cross over Jordan with the rest of Israel and lead them in the battle until they had conquered the rest of the land, which, as we have just seen, took about 5 to 7 years to do. And then these men could come back and dwell with their families and then have a permanent dwelling on this east side of the Jordan River. Now, beginning in the 7th verse, he's going to give a brief review of the kings and the territory that Joshua captured after they crossed the Jordan River in the true land of Canaan itself. So, verse 7, and these are the kings of the country which Joshua and the children of Israel smote on this side Jordan, on the west, from Baal-Gad in the valley of Lebanon, even unto the Mount Halak that goeth up to Seir. In this 7th verse, he gives the boundaries of the country that Joshua and his army conquered. On the north, it went all the way up to the valley of Lebanon to a place called Baal-Gad. And then on the south, it extended down to Mount Halak that goeth up to Seir, which is in the border of the country of the Edomites. This area is about 150 miles long. And if we use the Jordan River as the boundary on the east side, and the Mediterranean Sea is the boundary on the west side, in its widest area, it's about 60 miles long, and in the narrowest width is about 30 miles. So we roughly see what the area of this possession is, and he enumerates the boundaries of it. More detail about this is given in Numbers 34, beginning with the second verse. Then the last part of this seventh verse says, which Joshua gave unto the tribes of Israel for a possession according to their divisions. And Joshua does divide this among the remaining 9.5 tribes, and we'll get to that later in the book of Joshua, beginning with the next chapter. Verse 8, in the mountains and the valleys, and in the plains and in the springs, and in the wilderness and in the south country. So this verse describes the kind of land that was included in this territory that they captured in the land of Canaan. And this truly was a very beautiful and productive land. He talks about in the mountains. Now the mountains were the type of mountains that grow good grass and good crops. These are not just craggy peaks that have no true value in the sense of being an economic value. These mountains could be cultivated, and they were productive, and they could grow the grass for good pastures so that their cattle and sheep could thrive on these. Then he talks about the valleys. Here again, these valleys were not just boggy marshes. They were valleys that would grow good productive crops, and they could dwell on them and have a very fruitful harvest from the valleys. Then he talks about the plains and the springs. They were able to water their crops in the plains out of the springs that were there. And here again, we have a very fruitful and productive area. Then he mentions the wilderness. The wilderness, of course, was an area that was forested, and it added to the beauty and enhanced the other parts of the country and rounded out the variety of the types of land. And so he says in the wilderness and in the south country. And of course the south country included the mountainous backbone, it included the area around the Dead Sea, and it was another territory to enhance the variety of the various kinds of land that they did acquire. And although we can see that this was a very fruitful land, it was the land of milk and honey, it was a land in which they could be full, they could be fat, using the term figuratively, they could have all that they wanted, yet we see that God, along with the promise of giving them this land and all the fruitfulness of this land, he also said that if they turned from him, if they went into idolatry, that he would destroy the fruitfulness of this land. And this is stated in Deuteronomy, the 29th chapter, beginning with the 22nd verse. And let's read that passage. So that the generation to come of your children shall rise up after you, and the stranger that shall come from a far land shall say, when they see the plagues of that land, and the sicknesses which the Lord hath laid upon it, and that the whole land thereof is brimstone and salt and burning, and that it is not sown, nor beareth, nor any grass groweth therein, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zibeon, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and in his wrath. Even all nations shall say, wherefore hath the Lord done thus unto this land? What meaneth the heat of this great anger? Then men shall say, because they have forsaken the covenant of the Lord God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them forth out of the land of Egypt. For they went and served other gods, and worshipped them, gods whom they knew not, and whom he had not given unto them. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against this land to bring upon it all the curses that are written in this book. And the Lord rooted them out of their land in anger and in wrath and in great indignation, and cast them into another land, as it is this day. So we see here that this land, although it was so productive and fruitful and desirable, it was going to be changed because of their sin. And we have no reason to think that this land ever got back to its original state of productivity and desirability that it had when Joshua and his army first conquered it from the people who dwelt there. So continuing in the 8th verse now, he names the nations that they conquered when they went into Canaan. The Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now, originally, this land was inhabited by Canaan, who was the son of Ham. Canaan had the curse upon him that he received from his father Ham, who had violated the privacy of his father Noah. And consequently, although Canaan was allowed to inhabit this land, he had 11 sons. He and his sons together made up 12 tribes. And these were eventually condensed down into 7 nations, and they were to conquer the 7 nations, although we have one nation that's left out, and that's the Girgashites. And it's, according to tradition, some say that the Girgashites fled into Africa when they saw the Israelites coming in to attack the land. We do not know that. That's tradition. But for some reason or other, they're not named. Either they had been absorbed into the other nations, the 6 that are named here, or they did flee. We do not know the story of that from the Bible. And so, as he names these 6 nations that he captures, beginning in the 9th verse, he begins to name each king and the city from which each king comes in the order of their capture. So we're going to read from the 9th verse to the 24th verse. This will be a total of 31 kings, and they are enumerated here specifically and individually. Begin with verse 9. The king of Jericho, 1. The king of Ai, which is besides Bethel, 1. The king of Jerusalem, 1. The king of Hebron, 1. The king of Jarmuth, 1. The king of Lachish, 1. The king of Eglon, 1. The king of Gezer, 1. The king of Debir, 1. The king of Geder, 1. The king of Hormath, 1. The king of Arad, 1. The king of Libna, 1. The king of Adulam, 1. The king of Makeda, 1. The king of Bethel, 1. The king of Tapuah, 1. The king of Hepar, 1. The king of Apek, 1. The king of Lasharon, 1. The king of Madon, 1. The king of Hazar, 1. The king of Shimron Meron, 1. The king of Ashaph, 1. The king of Tahnash, 1. The king of Megiddon, 1. The king of Kedesh, 1. The king of Joniam of Carmel, 1. The king of Dor and the coast of Dor, 1. The king of the nations of Gilgal, 1. The king of Tirzah, 1. All the kings, 30 and 1. As he enumerates these 31 kings, it shows us what a very fruitful country Canaan then was. A land which could support so many kingdoms, and in which so many kings chose to throng together, rather than to scatter themselves into the other countries, which we may suppose might not have even been yet inhabited, but where, though they might find more room, they could not expect such plenty and such pleasure as they had in this land of Canaan. This was the land that God had chosen for Israel. But yet we find at this day, this land still has a great curse that it lies under, since its possessors rejected Christ and his gospel, as was foretold by Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 23. And of course, this is all because of the sin of the people of God after he had given them this land. Now this number of kings here, 31, also shows that these kings did not have really big ambitions. They contented themselves with the governments that each one of them had of one city and the little towns and villages that pertained to it. No one of them, so it appears, aimed to make himself the master of the rest. No one wanted to become the king of the whole area and combine several kingdoms into one. Yet, whenever there was a threat, they did unite for the common safety of the group against this army of Israel. Yet it does appear that they did have absolute power in the territories over which they reigned, that their subjects were really all their tenants and their vassals, and were entirely at their command. Also, as we read about these 31 kings and their small kingdoms, it shows how good God was to Israel and given them victory over all these kings and possessions of all these kingdoms. And as a result of that, what great obligations he hereby laid upon them to observe his statutes and to keep his laws. That's really all God wanted out of his people. He wanted them simply to observe the laws that he had given them, to know them, to study them, to be productive in them, and to be his people so that he then could truly be their God. As is stated in Psalms 105, verses 44 and 45, "And gave them the lands of the heathen, and they inherited the labor of the people, that they might observe his statutes and keep his laws. Praise ye the Lord." That's the total purpose that God had for these people. And it's the same purpose he has for us today. He wants us to observe his statutes and to keep his laws. Now, these statutes and laws of God, they really are articles of life for us. They are our instruction book as to how to maintain our bodies and our minds and our spirits, how to live, how to function, how to fulfill our reason for being. They are truly the manual for mankind. They are the book in which we find all of our reasons for being. We find the answers to our problems. We find the very thing that it'll take to please our Creator and cause us to be well accepted and well pleasing in His sight. So let us strive to follow the commands of God today, just as God intended for them to do during this time when He gave them this land of Canaan under the leadership of Joshua. Well, that concludes the 12th chapter of Joshua. So we'll close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.